Joining us now to discuss something very near and dear, specifically to my heart, also shows, but really, let's be honest, we all know how near and dear it is to mine. Anthony Petrelli joining us now to talk a little Leafs. Anthony, thanks so much for taking the time. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Well, I'd be better if that game was, you know, moderately entertaining and wasn't, you know, a dreadful two periods for the Leafs last night. I'd be a little better if that didn't happen. They're going to have games like this back to back. And look, Columbus had it too. I'm not taking it away from them. I also don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill here. It was a frustrating loss, but you know, do you take any big lessons away from it? Do you think it's proof positive that their bottom six is too small? Like, do you take big picture takeaways out of that? Or do you just chalk it up to one of those nights when you saw what happened against the Jackets?
Well, I don't, you know, like you said, don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill, but to some degree, it does reinforce, I think, a lot of things that people are already well aware of. I mean, there's no come to light bulb moment. I think most things are pretty clear at this point when it comes to the group. I mean, they played Columbus in the bottom six, was just there at best. They had four guys play under 8 minutes last night in the second half of a back-to-back against one of the worst teams in the league, and they were at home. You know, Pierre Engvall got benched. He played like 10 minutes. The only reason David Kampf's numbers were so high, or ice time was so high, and by high, I mean like around the 13-minute mark, was because he played 5 minutes shorthanded. Otherwise, he also wasn't doing very much. I mean, there's not much to it, and they're not, you know, Austin Matthews returning and let's say Alex Kerfoot going down to the bottom six from that being saved. Like they need, I mean, realistically, they probably need multiple bodies, but they definitely need at least one and that one that can be a needle mover, someone that could actually make a difference.
How much of it, when you look at how the team performed last night, Anthony, how much of it do you put on the shoulders of Wall versus just the defense not playing very well?
Honestly, I thought a lot of it was actually the other goalie, Merz Lincolns. He was really good. Like he, like the Leafs had a ton of chances. It wasn't like, and I watched the game this morning. And in full disclosure, I was out last night. I recorded. I watched the whole thing this morning. And based on what I was picking up yesterday, there was a lot of, they went up 2-0. Maybe they thought it was point night. They kind of took their foot off the pedal. But when I was watching, they had a ton of chances. They couldn't bury. Right. Marner had multiple chances or opportunities in the slot where he passed one off to Bunting. He had the 2-on-1 where instead of shooting, he like took it behind the net. He kind of has this thing going on where he doesn't shoot, even though he should, right? We've seen him in recent weeks. He sniped Linus Ullmark. He sniped Connor Hellebuck, like two of the better goalies in the league this season. He danced around Shesterkin, the reigning Vezina winner. I mean, he can shoot and score, but he was actively passing up shots. Yarncroft got robbed a few times. Steve set the post. It was like they just couldn't finish. And then, to your point, that makes it worse when, you know, one goalie's doing that on one end, and then Joseph Wall's watching it, and then suddenly it's like, you know, there's a goal where he probably could have battled harder for the puck in the crease. And I don't think the game was on him, but the Leafs really got to, like, bear down and build a lead.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And, you know, I think sometimes this element gets a little overstated, but like, you know, this is a kid who's had an awesome year in the Marlies. You know him. It's not like he's a stranger. He has played games for this team in the past, and that's what you give him. Like, just the amount of shots that you're giving up to a team like Columbus, like, we know this team is capable of locking it down more than that. And you're right, they were getting chances on the other side of things, but I would think you'd just want to make life a little easier on a guy like Joe Wall. And especially when you point out the ice time, it is so clear as day. I'm really happy you bring up the Marner thing there, because I started thinking I was going crazy, because now, full disclosure, I'm screaming shoot as he finds Tavares for the first goal against Columbus in the first game on Friday night. And it's like, yeah, sometimes he does know better, but my goodness, like, you've seen him use it. It is more of a weapon. He does sometimes get a little too pass happy. And I think that goes to your point about the guys looking at it. Oh, maybe it's point night here. And obviously we know how he thinks, and more times than not, he's right, that he is going to get his points coming, you know, via pass passing as opposed to shooting. You know, in terms of what this team needs, I'm with you. I think they need one more body, if not two more. I think in a perfect world, one's kind of high end that can, maybe it's a center who can flip over to the wing, and then you have another kind of, you know, plugger type in the bottom. All the chatter's been out there about Timo Meier, and obviously, you know, Tarasenko's off the board now. That never felt like a realistic Leafs target. And Horvat, I kind of feel the same way about it. Is there a dream realistic target that you've kind of circled as the guy that makes the most sense? Or is there somebody maybe, you know, a little more under the radar that you're interested in?
Yeah, the guy I've consistently come back to just in terms of price and what I think he could bring is Jonathan Toews. I know that he's not what he once was. I think his production is still very much there in terms of he's a 20 goal scorer. He's a 40 to 50 point player. He's pacing out pretty well production wise on a really bad hockey team. But everything beyond that, he can play center. We've seen him move to the wing at times for Team Canada, which I know was ages ago, but I still don't moving to a wing and complementing, you know, an Austin Matthews or John Tavares. He's the best faceoff man in the league percentage wise this season. So he could kind of man that a little bit. He has the playoff pedigree. I mean, often we watch them, right? They've generally been like right there in the playoffs. They've been missing that little extra push over, you know, that original mountain that they got to climb, that slay the beast moment. And he's just pedigree. He's a serial winner. He has been. I think he would be a kind of player that would probably get his legs under him. I mean, going from a really bad team, and they've been bad for a while now, to a team that's a legitimate contender. I watch him and think whoever gets him, I think they're going to be really, really pleasantly surprised. And I've kind of felt the same way about Mark Giordano last year, another really good veteran who was on a really bad team. He came to Toronto. I think he's been spectacular ever since they've acquired him.
Yeah, I'm with you. Toews was a guy I was a little uncertain of when the chatter, you know, picked up. But then, like you said, when you look at not just the production metrics, but the face-off numbers, that's something that, you know, never goes out of style. The idea of having another forward that you can throw over the boards to win a draw, like it felt like they were relying on Tavares so much in that regard. And, you know, not that there's a problem with that. You want to rely on John Tavares for it. It's one of the things he's really, really good at. You just don't want it to have to be him and him alone. And, you know, Matthews is capable, Camp's normally capable, but it's never a problem. You know, in terms of the other forward, like, because I'm in agreement with you that you'd like one. I think two would really help. What do you think are the kind of boxes they should check? Because, you know, the guy that I've kind of had circled, and I don't know how realistic it is, just given the term that's left on the deal, is, you know, a guy like Nick Deslauriers. He can come in, he can fight if you need him to, he could kill penalties, he's physical, he has played on a good team recently, you know, going back to the move the Wild made to get him last year. What is the type of player? Like, I'm not asking you to say yes or no on Deslauriers, but what is the type of player that you would prioritize if you're adding them specifically for the bottom six?
Yeah, I'd probably look at a right winger of sorts, preferably a right-handed shot, without putting any names out there, just someone who can actually play right wing and is on their right proper handedness on that side. I think who are the right wingers right now in that group? There's Joey Anderson. I mean, he is not a viable third line option in the playoffs. Like, that is not real. He is probably not even a realistic fourth line option. And then everyone else is pretty much left-handed, right? And so, and you could say, all right, well, maybe they bumped Yarncroc down to that spot, but he wasn't very good there. Like, he was really bad the first month of the season on the third line. So I would be looking for a right winger of sorts. They maybe had one or they thought they did with Nicholas Oakubel, and then they obviously put him on waivers. They maybe thought they had one with Dennis Malgin. Don't know why, but they thought they might have. And like, now they just basically, it's like Joey Anderson or like Bobby McMahon comes up and plays his offside, or like, you know, these aren't real options. Like, they realistically need an actual proper right-handed right winger.
Well, when you look at the defense as well, Anthony, and you look at, I know it's probably less on the priority list than a forward, so I'm with you guys on that, but I know a lot of people were discussing Gavrikov himself, who obviously plays for the Jackets over these past couple of games, and we just basically saw two games against the Jackets in which he played. It's funny, because I was actually working on the Friday game, the win in Columbus, and I'm sorry, Gunnar, because that was a much more enjoyable game than yesterday's game, but...
Hey, we added on the fan. Don't apologize.
I came away from these two games not super impressed with Gavrikov, in the sense that knowing that it would probably cost a first round pick to get him, I'm not sure if that's the right answer. I don't know where you fall on that, Anthony.
Yeah, so he was really bad on that Friday game in particular. Like, he was awful. I think Columbus as a whole was awful. That game from their end felt like a competition between Patrick Laine and Ken Johnson there to see how many guys they could try to toe drag or put it through their legs. And they had no interest in playing real hockey that night. I don't know what they did. Kudos to them for rebounding on Saturday and, you know, they grinded, but the Friday game was awful for them. And Gavrikov is never going to look good in a game like that, right? He is meat and potatoes. He is a box out, little interference plays, you know, stopping cycles. He's not an open ice guy. He's not like a skilled defender, but I think in terms of what they would probably want from a defenseman, other than a legitimate needle mover, like a Chychrun, beyond him, I think it would probably be a Gavrikov type of what he brings, right? Because you kind of have the first pair with Riley and Brody, and that's probably not going anywhere. And then you have the second pair, which gets interesting because that's their matchup pair. Justin Hull is almost certainly going to be on it. But you kind of wonder, can Mark Giordano do that every other night for two straight months at 39 years old? Like, that is a massive ask. And then you look at the third pair and you say, are they going to put these like two early 20 defensemen who've largely struggled? Remember, they've played actual good teams this year. They've struggled. Like, they get exposed a little bit on the forecheck and turning the puck over. I thought Boston completely worked them right before the All-Star break there in that game. I mean, Sandin had a really bad giveaway, which is kind of reminiscent of whatever we've seen from him down the stretch of every season so far and in the playoffs that he did appear in. So I think ideally you'd probably like a better partner for Hole in that shutdown role. And then that allows you to bump Giordano to the third pair with Liljegren. And we know that those two are very good together. And so in that sense, I could see Gavrikov working there. But you're right. If you're judging him off of these two games, it's a tough look for him. He was really, really bad on Friday. He got worked for a goal. He took a dumb penalty. He got robbed. Like, it was bad for him all around.
Yeah, the best I could take away from that game was, hey, he can move around okay out there. He can skate a little bit, which, hey, for a big defenseman, there are far worse traits to have. I was going to ask you about the special teams, but I kind of want to drill down on Sandin and Liljegren and the kind of steps or the growth they've made this year. Because I am probably, I don't know, I got to be in like the top 5% of guys high on Rasmus Sandin. Like, I'm really, really big on him. I think there's a likely world, maybe it doesn't happen here, where he develops into exactly that top four guy that you want, but he has got to lead the league for, you know, good defensemen, however you want to quantify that, in at least one flub, unexplainable turnover a game. Like, it is just so hard to trust that he is not going to do that in a big moment. And it'd be one thing if it was the reads that don't make sense. It's usually not a case of him trying to, you know, like, really, really needle or really thread the needle on a pass or stretch pass or something like that. It feels like it is just a complete flub off his stick. And I can't remember a guy that I have seen with that specific flaw before. It is so frustrating to me. And for all the good I think he does, and I think he does a ton of good, I just can't get past that because I feel like he always has at least one of those big flubs a game.
Yeah, I think the thing with him is over the course of 82, he tries to make plays coming out of the zone. And that's often, I mean, he's a good player and he's skilled. So by and large, you're going to net out ahead on that wit, right? Like, for if you have that one giveaway game, sure, let's call it, he probably has like 3 to 5 like exceptional passes or plays to get out of the zone. So over the course of 82 games, you do the math and he nets out quite favorably. But I think in the playoffs, when you've instantly cut the league in half and you've gotten rid of playing against the Columbuses of the world, and then you factor in that the Leafs are going to have to play Tampa and then Boston. And by the way, the Leafs are actually behind Tampa in points percentage now. So they, on points percentage, they would not even have home ice against Tampa at the moment after losing last night. And you can't be, there's a line between I need to make a play to get the puck out cleanly and I just need to get the puck out. And I think that's the line that he struggled with, but he's super young, right? Takes defenseman 300 games usually, that's the saying, and he's, I think he's around 100. So I'm sure he'll be fine as he goes along, but right now I think that that gauge of where he gets into trouble is he's consistently looking to make plays, which is, again, admirable, but he needs to do a better job of recognizing at times, like, there is no play. I just literally need to get the puck out. If that's high off the glass, so be it, but it's better than getting burned and giving up the tap-in like what happened against Boston.
Anthony, before we let you run, today is, of course, Super Bowl Sunday, so we appreciate you being generous with your time for us. After two straight nights with Leafs games, we're not going to get another Leafs game until, I think, Wednesday, so quite a bit of time before the next one for you to prepare for. So I hope you get a chance to watch the Super Bowl tonight. I know you enjoy football. Are there any prop bets you have your eyes on?
Yeah, so I'm for sure in on the Chiefs as a whole.
Okay.
I like them. And, I mean, to be honest, the ones that I've been looking at are, and I know the odds aren't great on the first one, but it's a Travis Kelce anytime touchdown, which I know is the highest or the worst odds, I guess, of any anytime touchdown score. I just look at that as it's probably happening. And Kadarius Toney